Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Squawker Talker podcast. And with the Premier League action now back on track for the final stretch of the season, so too is the Champions League. Yes, it is business time across Europe as the great and good from across the continent do battle in the last 16. And with the competition sparking back into life, we are dedicating today's pod to the inevitables of the Champions League last 16. As the cream begins to rise, we've looked into the key patterns and the numbers and the data behind each game and found almost, and I'm putting this in as a disclaimer, almost one inevitable thing that will happen over the next few weeks. 8 games in total to run through, and we'll be dedicating a little section to each one to get you nice and geared up for the next stage of the Champions League. Right then, my name's Fergal Brennan, and as always, we have Squawker's chief football scribe, Mr. Mohamed Butt. Mo, how's things?
Yeah, pretty good, pretty good. Excited to get stuck in. The Champions is back. You know, it's a good time to be a football fan, my friend.
It is, indeed. You start to feel like you're getting into the business end of things. Alongside Mo, we have European football journalist and La Liga expert, Jamie Kemble. Jamie, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm very good, thank you.
Wonderful stuff. Right, we're going to get cracking, and we're going to get straight into this in just a second, because there is a lot to get through. 8 games, lots of talking points, and these possible pesky inevitables. But as a little warm-up, little icebreaker, I just want to ask you about the last 16. Mo, we'll go to you first on this one. Semis, finals, they're always where the attention is. Who won? Where were you? What was the big goal? What was the big performance? But the last 16 does kind of separate the real big boys from, you know, the lesser known names or the lesser known lights, because we start to see teams pull away and make a push to go on and win the tournament. So in that idea of separating, what's your favourite Champions League last 16 memory?
Oh, it's the remontada. That's not even a question. Like, it's the most ridiculous thing. It was such an epic moment. It had the feel of a semi-final. Of course, it was the round of 16 and Barca got knocked out the next round, which was hilarious. But it was amazing when it happened. You know, you have to win 5-0. You go 4-0 up. They score a goal. You're thinking it's all over. Then Neymar with 2 goals in the last, like, 3-4 minutes of the game. He scores 2 goals. You get a flipping Sergio Roberto. Oh, it's just incredible. Yeah. Had everything. It was absolutely sensational. It was an amazing game. And of course, it set the stage for much of modern football, because PSG was so wounded by that. They went and got Neymar in the summer, and now they've got Messi. And so it's like, and Barca sunk about as low as a club, an elite club, can sink without becoming like Arsenal level or Milan level. And now they're on their way back up. It's just, it's set the stage for so much of modern football. And it was just great fun as well.
Jamie, these things can be turning points. Last 16, 2 legs, it can essentially dictate a season, because if you're not still in a cup competition, if you're not in a strong position in your domestic league, the end of February can sometimes be the end of your season if you're not really pushing for major honours. So for you, big last 16 memory, what are you going for?
I would actually agree with Mo, but I'm going to go outside the box. I'm going to go for Chelsea's comeback against Napoli in the 2011-12 season. That one went to extra time, of course, as change of manager and all that. An unbelievable Didier Drogba assist. He kind of takes the ball and turns and crosses in half a turn and 2 touches. A brilliant strike from Branislav Ivanovic right into the top of the net to make it 4-1 and 4-3 in aggregate, as it was. So
Torres played well in that tie, didn't he, as well? Like, he had a really good tie, if I recall correctly.
Well, I thought the competition, wasn't it? Yeah, he had a good competition, in fairness, despite his league struggles. That's my kind of outside-the-box memory of the last 16.
Regular listeners to the podcast will possibly, probably, potentially remember that back in December, Mo and myself and Tom Gale did a last 16 preview based on the draw, and we threw in our predictions to look at the picture of how we thought things would shake up going into the quarterfinals. So, Mo, I'm going to give you an opportunity. A few months down the line, January transfer window is now closed. You've generally gone with the form book in terms of who's going to go through, which is strangely straightforward for you, Mo. I'm going to give you this point now so that I can hold it against you in a court of law in the weeks to come. Is there any changes? Okay. Do you anybody being a bolt from the blue, maybe based on the January window, or an improvement or a drop-off in form?
Well, I'm going to be honest with you. I have no idea what I predicted. But I will say this. I do remember tipping Villarreal to beat Juventus because Juventus were a mess. And they've since signed Denis Zakaria and Dusan Vlahovic. So I will renege on that prediction. I would say Juventus probably going to, and they actually might even go further depending on how comfortable the draw is, because Vlahovic is sensational. Real Madrid PSG is going to be even more interesting now because Benzema might not make the first leg, but Ramos is out. And my whole thing hinged on that, that Ramos was going to get a revenge goal against Real Madrid. I mean, and you know, is Neymar going to be there? It's going to be very, that's going to become more interesting. Everything else, I think, is pretty much straightforward as it is. Although Chelsea's form is not, but they'll still have too much for Liverpool. Well, you think so? Maybe. We'll see.
We shall see. And that's the whole thing. Well, that's the whole point of the podcast. And obviously, that's what is so exciting when we get into the nitty gritty of the knockout stages of the Champions League. So we're going to break this up into two parts. Part one is going to be the games kicking off the week commencing February 14th. And then part two are the games kicking off the week commencing February 21st. So part one is Sporting Lisbon, Manchester City, PSG, Real Madrid, RB Salzburg, Bayern Munich, Inter Milan against Liverpool. And then after the break is the other four games: Chelsea, Lille, Atletico Madrid, Manchester United, Villarreal, Juventus, and then to wrap up, Benfica against Ajax. So let's get started. Mo, we're going to go with you first. Sporting Lisbon against Manchester City. City, red hot favourites going into the last 16, not just to get past Sporting, but to probably go on and win the competition. But it's not all rosy in the garden, particularly in their own 18-yard box for City in the Champions League so far this season. So my kind of inevitable here is that City defensively are likely to concede a goal. Looking at the numbers, they conceded 10 goals in the group stages. That's the second worst of any team in the last 16, with ironically Sporting bottom on 12. XGA, as in goals against, for City in the groups, 5.5, which is just under a goal per game. Fifth best in the last 16 sides. So that kind of hints that they don't give up a lot of chances, but the chances that they do give up, they tend to concede from. No penalties conceded and just one own goal. That was poor old John Stones who popped one past Edison. One of the other issues probably is in terms of lineups. They've only been able to play Walker, Diaz, Laporte and Cancelo in half of the group games. Walker is banned for this one and there's potential injury doubts over Aymeric Laporte. Domestically, tells a similar story, just two clean sheets from the last six domestic games in 2020 and six clean sheets in 17 games away from home in all competitions this season. And then little shout out to Sporting, seventh on the goals scored list from the groups, 14 from six games, XG of 10, so that's around two goals per game. And at home, they never fail to miss the target. They've scored in every home game this season. Manchester City are more than likely going to have enough to power on in this tie, but they do have to be careful.
They do have to be careful. I think Sporting will score. I think that the numbers suggest that City have not been very good defensively in the Champions League. However, City are also extremely dominant. Then this is my prediction for City. The one thing that's going to happen is they're going to have over 500 passes. Okay, every game they've played, they've had over 50% possession, right? And they've had over 500 passes. The only game they didn't, sorry, was the first match week, the first game, they had 468 against Leipzig in game match week one, match day one, I think as they call it. Every other game, over 500 passes. I think that's for definite what's going to happen is they'll rack up over 500 passes. They'll dominate the ball. I think they'll win too, but that's a boring prediction just to say they'll win because it's like, of course they will. I think they'll rack up over 500 passes. They're a sensational side. What's interesting between, this is why we always say almost making predictions in December is a bit of a fool's game because the game, teams change so much from the end of the group stage. Now, City went on that 12-match winning run, which is just ridiculous. They built a real momentum over the winter. They extended their lead in the Premier League. They're miles ahead. I think they're going to... Sporting are good, right? Sporting Portugal, they're a very good team. But they're going to come up against... They're too impressive an opponent. You know, City are just too good at this, basically. They'll concede a goal. They'll still win. You know, how many will they score? The thing is, we don't even know. You know, the 500 passes is just going to give them such dominance, such control over the game. You know, and the thing with the strikers, who pops up? Is it going to be Sterling comes to form? Is it going to be Ruben? Is it going to be Bernardo Silva? Is it going to be Phil Foden? Going to be maybe Jack Grealish surprise cameo? You know, they've got so many weapons. They're going to win this game. It's going to be dominant. But yeah, over 500 passes, maybe over 50% possession as well.
Yeah, bold tip. But yeah, it is difficult to see anything other than City going through, but they do give up a deceptively large amount of goals. That is a big part of it. And generally speaking, as you say, the names that you just reel off, they can outgun anyone. But you look at this, maybe going into the quarters and going into the semis, when they don't give up that many chances, but they do concede goals, they might not get an opportunity to get outgunned. So probably one to watch a little bit further down the line. But City, beware, Sporting Lisbon are likely, according to this inevitables list, which, you know, feel free to disagree with us on, are likely to get a goal at home. Right, we're going to move on to the second game. And this is my favourite game to be looking forward to, but it's also my favourite inevitable. Jamie, we're going to go to you on this. PSG against Real Madrid. And it is all, for me, about one man, Mr. Messi. Because Messi loves playing against Real Madrid. And to be honest, these are the nights, these are the games that PSG bought or brought Lionel Messi to the club for. So, Real Madrid fans, just close your ears for a second. Lionel Messi has 26 goals and 14 assists against Real Madrid in 45 games as a Barcelona player. They're his favourite opponent to play against. He hasn't played against anybody else more, and they're fifth on his personal to-score-against list. Probably the most famous was back-to-back goals in the 2011 semi-finals, and then Barcelona obviously went on and beat United in the final in Wembley. And true to form, he's not exactly set Ligue 1 alight. PSG are flying, the 13 points clear as it stands. But in the Champions League, the little man from Rosario has stepped up. 5-5, obviously that wonder goal against City in the group stages. And there's obviously numbers pushing this, but there's also a big, fat slice of narrative. These are the old enemy. These are the foes. It all just seems to be set up for Messi. He loves the last 16, the most last 16 goals in Champions League history, 29, 51 knockout stage goals, second only to Cristiano. If you believe in any sort of narrative, Jamie, Messi has to bang one in.
He does, he does. And this is just, like you say, it's just such a good game, and obviously the tie of the round and all of those narratives you just mentioned make this just so exciting. I'm delighted we got two legs, and this is the Champions League at its best. Like you say, Messi just loves playing against Real Madrid from the very start of his Barcelona career. He's lit up El Clasicos, and we've just loved watching him in those big games. And this I think, it could be a statement for him that he kind of... I know Barcelona have gone down a dodgy track themselves, but almost a statement that for him that he hasn't taken a step back. So I think moving to PSG, you almost thought he's moving away from these big occasions in the league for the sake of taking them to the holy ground of the Champions League, what they want more than anything else. So I think winning this game against Real Madrid, proving it against these serial winners, can really kind of buck that statement that he almost wasted opportunities by moving away from La Liga into what I know is harsh to say, and sorry, La Liga on fans, but to a smaller league where these occasions come up less frequently. So I think that could be a real statement for him if he turns up in this one. Like you say, hasn't really impressed as much in Ligue 1 altogether. I think 7 goals, 7 assists in 19 appearances across all competitions. But like you mentioned in the stats there, most of those goals have come, I think, 5 of the 7 in the Champions League. So we know he turns up in these big games. But you have to flip to the other side. Real Madrid, how much experience have they got in these games? Carlo Ancelotti as well. They've got the most experienced man at the helm, man of experience of winning this competition, something PSG haven't done. And Real Madrid is certainly capable with the characters they've got, the David Alabas and the experience throughout the squad. Obviously, Benzema may not be there for the first leg, but they know how to win these games. And you know, we'll see what PSG and other injury issues of their own, but they've got the talent. I think Real Madrid have got that experience, and that's another narrative in this really intriguing battle.
This is something that I wanted to quickly ask you, Jamie, before we move on to the third game, because Sergio Ramos leaving, ironically going to PSG, Rafa Varane going to Manchester United, that experience that runs right the way through the Real Madrid team. They still obviously have the three boys in midfield, Casemiro, Toni Kroos and Luka Modric. Benzema, if he's fit, if he's not fit, will still be around. Asensio has won huge amounts of Champions League titles. Courtois, even someone like Lucas Vazquez is included in the squad. But from the outside looking in at La Liga, how confident are you from watching Real Madrid this season that David Alaba and Eder Militao, who you'd imagine will partner together, can hold on to Messi, Neymar and Kylian Mbappe?
Yeah, I think so. We've been right up there. A bit of a dodgy start with an unsettled back line with injuries. But since you've put Alaba and Militao together, they've really done some impressive work back there. And I think Ferland Mendy's back in full training this week. He looks like coming in. That'll be huge because it means Alaba won't have to be shifted to out wide. That would have probably meant that Nacho Fernandez comes into the middle. But that looks like it's going to be avoided now. They'll stick with the usual back four, Carvajal, Mendy, Militao and Alaba. And like I said, they're impressed so far this season. This is obviously one of the biggest tests they've had, especially given the lack of of competition at the top in La Liga this season. They haven't had that sort of ultra-competitive Clásico. Atletico Madrid have been way off it. Sevilla, not quite at their level. So this will be the big test. So I don't think we can quite know what's coming, but on the face of it, that is a solid back four and one that we should be confident of dealing with PSG despite their talent.
See, I don't know how solid they are. I think they give up a lot of chance. I think Courtois has bailed them out an awful lot this season, and I worry how they're going to handle Mbappe. I mean, remember, this is killing Mbappe. This is not, with the greatest respect, considering he's got an amazing goal last night, Borja Iglesias, right? This is not, you know, your average, it's not even Ralder Thomas. This is killing Mbappe. This is, he's got 203 goals and 97 assists in 314 games. He's 23 years old. Baffling talent. There's a reason Real Madrid tried to pay 180 million for him in the summer when they could get him for free in a year. Like, he's incredible, I think. And him having, forget Neymar. Neymar is probably even going to play. You know, he's off in Carnival, whatever. Having Mbappe dovetail with Messi, and Messi, who, as we've mentioned, loves to destroy Real Madrid, I think that's the combination. That's going to destroy Real Madrid. That defense, Alaba's very good progressively with the ball. He's an amazing leader. He's a real good man. He's got real great mentality, but he leaves gaps behind him when he plays. You can run in behind him. Militao has shown to whatever opponent recently. Courtois has been amazing, so he might just bail them out anyway. But I would wager Messi and the combination of Messi and Mbappe. And if Verratti can hold his own, obviously Verratti's going to go up against that midfield. That midfield is boss. We know that. In Champions League, those guys are great. Cruz, Modric, and Casemiro. So it depends how Verratti holds his own in there, with Idrissi Gueye, I'm assuming. I don't know who else Poch puts in there. But Poch also has a horrible record against Real Madrid. That's the other thing I have to consider. I mean, it was for Espanyol, but still had a horrible record against Real Madrid. So let's see. But Messi and Mbappe, to me, it's just too dangerous. I don't think they can cope with that.
From a tie that's real two heavyweights just slugging it out to one that's maybe a little bit further down the call sheet, Mo, and that's RB Salzburg against Bayern Munich. Obviously, Bayern Munich, 2020 winners. Nearly got my year wrong there, yes. 2020 winners of the Champions League. And I've titled this little section of the inevitable in this game as Lewandowski to go wild in Austria. Lewandowski's been the main man in the Champions League this season. He's top of the shop across most stats, or second in the list. He's top for goals in all domestic competitions in Europe. 24 Bundesliga goals already, and we're only just into the second half of the campaign. He's second in the Champions League, just behind Sebastian Haller, which, in fairness to Haller, was probably based on those goal-crazy games that he had, but he is still edging Lewandowski as it stands. And then we break it down in some of the kind of tighter metrics. He's second for goals across 90 minutes, 1.58 goals per game. So he's basically there or thereabouts in behind Haller, and he basically is as close to a guaranteed goal, or maybe even two goals, as you can get this season. Currently, in terms of active Champions League goal scorers, he's top 82, in behind, obviously, the two boys, Ronaldo and Messi. He's leading Benzema, and he's got 14 last 16 goals. There's an argument that Bayern have never been as reliant on him as they are now, because it is a slightly aging squad. There is some transition in certain positions. And you look at his figures compared to some of his teammates, he's got double the amount of Champions League goals of any other player and 14 more than his next in the Bundesliga, and that's Serge Gnabry. And then when you just try, I'm just reeling off these numbers here. He scored in six of his last seven Champions League knockout games, the epitome of a big game player. But the one game that he didn't score was the 2020 final. So he is a big game player, as much as we don't like that as a cliche. He is. And Bayern are arguably on his shoulders more than ever.
I mean, what can you say? He's amazing. He's an amazing footballer. He deservedly won the best striker in Europe award, best UEFA striker award. Didn't deserve the Ballon d'Or. Sorry if anyone was still is hung up on that. Didn't deserve it. Shouldn't have won the best either, because he wasn't the best. But great goal scorer, fantastic. One of the best out there right now. Yeah, that Cristiano has fallen off. The best goal scorer out there, Robert Lewandowski. No questions about that. Absolutely world class. But you know, my prediction is not going to be Lewandowski, because that's boring. Because everyone knows, oh, he's going to score a goal. I think Bayern are going to keep a clean sheet. I think that's the thing to look out for in this game. Obviously, Lewandowski probably is going to score, because he just does all the time. But Bayern kept three straight clean sheets, basically qualified from the group as a result of their thing. And then they let in two goals against Benfica in a home game, and they let in a goal against Dinamo Kiev. And then again, they had to keep a clean sheet against Barcelona to shut them down, to make sure that Barca didn't qualify. Julian Nagelsmann was not interested in letting them, you know, have a freebie. He put out a strong team and he beat them and kept a clean sheet again. Bayern are, obviously, they're sensational. going forward. But they're also quite solid at the back with Manuel Neuer. With now they've got rid of Alaba, they've got Nicolas Schüller, Dayot Upamecano. They've got a solid defense as well. So I would suspect they will not only pummel poor Salzburg into the ground, because I mean, you know, look, you can buy penalties Karim Adeyemi is very good at buying penalties, very good at winning penalties, but against the Bayern defenders, it's not going to be as easy. Lewandowski is too nice, too good up front, but I think Bayern are going to keep a clean sheet. I think they're going to shut Salzburg down completely. I think it's going to be absolute, like 6-7-0 over the two legs, probably, but the nil is going to be the key part, because Bayern are going to gear up, they're gearing up for another Champions League run. They want that Champions League, and they know that the most important thing you can do is not concede goals, because they will always score goals. Bayern will always score. They've got enough too much firepower not to. Can they not concede as well? That's the key. And I think they will get that right starting in this game.
Yeah, this looks like almost one of the most open shot games in the last 16. And just as a quick heads up, we're going to be previewing this game in a bit more detail, talking about how you can or probably can't stop Bayern Munich in the Champions League next season. Myself, Mo and Jasmine Barber are going to be chatting about that on next week's podcast. So make sure you check that out if you are a Bundesliga fan or if you just want to get the inside track on Bayern Munich. Right, we're going to move on to the fourth game and the last one before we take a quick break. Jamie, Inter Milan against Liverpool, the boys. The Klopp's boys are back in town. Mo Salah is back in training. There was talk in Liverpool that he knocked on the groundskeeper's door to get the keys off him so he could go in and get a few extra laps under his belt. Can't confirm that, but I'd love to know if that is actually true.
Sounds true.
Sadio Mane was on the last flight out. I hope it's true. And the type of character he is, it probably is true. Mane was on the last flight out of Senegal. Obviously, he was given a bit of extra time to have a party with his teammates and present his trophy to his country. Brilliant stuff for him. But they're back now for Liverpool, and they're back in business for their club. And Mo Salah and Sadio Mane will be itching to get started. Just looking at some of the numbers, we know that Salah has been incredible for Liverpool so far this season. He's top for goals. He's top for goals per 90 minutes. He's top for goals and assists. He's top for goals and assists per 90 minutes. Just to reel them off, 16 goals, 0.81 goals per 90 minutes, 25 combined goal and assist, and 1.26 for goals and assists per 90 minutes. Absolutely mad in terms of metrics. And Mane's not too far behind him, 10.3 in terms of goals. That's only bettered by Salah and Diogo Jota, who's going to be alongside them. One of Salah or Mane, and we know they've been so synonymous with Liverpool's success, but one of the best stats that I've managed to dig out is that one or both of Salah and Mane have scored in 10 of Liverpool's last Champions League games in 11 outings. Incredible stuff as a partnership, incredible on their own. If they're ready, if they're back, if they're rested, Liverpool could go to town here.
Yeah, they certainly got the capability of doing that. Obviously, they come back, Salah and Mane, different experiences in the end of AFCON. So it's a bit of difficult conversations perhaps when they got back to base, but yeah, you just mentioned all the stats there, just unstoppable on their day, and it makes Liverpool contenders even when they're not at their best. You know, it's just difficult to bet against these two players. Inter, we saw them hang around a little bit against Real Madrid in the group stages. They lost 1-0 and then 2-0. They were certainly much better in the first game. I've been quite impressed with Inter, really, how they've responded. You know, lost a manager, some financial issues as well, but it's, you know, top of Serie A, their second best defensive record in the league. And you'd think this really is about Liverpool. They need to put Inter to the sword, I feel. And they certainly got the ability to do that with Mane, Salah, Jota, whoever it may be. They've got the capability of doing it. But I do feel if they let Inter, you get behind the ball, they let Inter catch their breath in those key areas, Inter are good enough to at least frustrate them and take this game deep into the second leg. But like I say, the most likely thing is that Liverpool put them to bed. But I think they have to take this to Inter very early in the tie. And if they do, that'll be the key to them taking all 3 points. And we mentioned, I say all 3 points, but going through to the next stage, we mentioned Salah and Mane come back as well. You know, Liverpool, I think, have scored three or more goals in the last three of the last four games, and that was without them. So this is a good team anyway, but you add them back and it makes Liverpool huge favourites here.
Yeah, Liverpool are very scary, but I want to give one bit of advice to everyone who's watching out. Edin Dzeko has scored in his last three games against Liverpool. Once for Man City in 2015, and then either leg of the 2018 semi-final when Liverpool beat them. Liverpool smashed Roma, but Dzeko scored in ninth leg. So keep an eye out. I predict Dzeko is going to score in one or both of these legs, probably both. I don't think into a win. I think they will be outgunned. Much as I would love it if they could win, I think they will find themselves to be very much outgunned by Liverpool's forward line, as Jamie says. But keep an eye on Dzeko. I think, you know, Liverpool's defence isn't as solid as it has been in previous years. We've seen that Griezmann put Van Dijk in a blender, and that's Griezmann. So, you know, but keep an eye on Dzeko. I think he's gonna get a goal or two in this tie.
Yeah, I think there's going to be goals at both ends. And as you say, I would agree, Liverpool, fantastic going forward. Still fantastic at the back, but there's a little bit of a creak here and there, and that will be something that Inter will be looking to press on. Right, we're going to grab ourselves a quick break. Four games in the bank and four games to come. Obviously, that's the first week of Champions League action boxed off. After the break, it's Chelsea, it's Manchester United, it's Juventus, and it is group stage kingpins Ajax. We're going to be previewing all of those games and looking at the inevitables. All that to come in just a second. Hello and welcome back to the Squawker Talker Weekly Podcast. This week we are talking all things Champions League. The last 16 rolls back into town in the next couple of weeks, and we are checking out the data, the key numbers, and some of the quote inevitables behind the last 16 ties. We've already done four, so now we're moving on to the next block of games, and we're starting with Chelsea-Lille. Jamie, I'm going to go to you on this one, because for me, the big story, particularly from a Chelsea perspective, is Romelu Lukaku and how much they need him. And there's always this narrative around Lukaku. A huge amount of it is massively unfair and massively lazy in terms of attitudes, comments, pieces that are written, televised pieces around Romelu Lukaku based on people that haven't watched an awful lot of Romelu Lukaku. But again, we find ourselves in this position where he almost has to, quote, prove himself to an extent. And in reality, when he's been given the green lights, his Champions League knockout record is pretty solid. Three goals in four Champions League knockout starts when he was at United, and Inter, despite their domestic success, didn't actually get out of the group stages in the two seasons that he was there. So far, so good in terms of his form with Chelsea in the Champions League, 2 in 4 group stage games, and obviously he had that injury which snapped the group stage run in half for him. He's up against the Lille side. Defensively is their strong suit. Joint second, fewest group stage goals conceded, just 4 from 6 games. So they are quite tight at the back. They've got a solid base. Chelsea will need something special to break through. But Ronaldo, who's left, he's gone to Atletico Madrid, was a big player for them. He's moved on. You would fancy Chelsea, particularly ironically in that position that Lukaku likes to drift over to the right-hand side, where there's now no Reinildo, that he can dominate this game and get himself a goal.
Yeah, I think so. I agree with your statement. I think he's kind of underrated, especially at this kind of stage of the competition. He's done well in the past, like you say, whether it's for United or Inter or anyone else. But yeah, I think against Lille, like you mentioned, the defensive solidarity. But you know, they come back and they played against Sevilla in the group stage. I was really impressed with the way they actually went behind. And that was kind of against the game plan, if you like. The game plan is very much to keep a solid base and then go and get a goal at the other end. But we went behind against Sevilla and still came back and won 2-1. I was really impressed with that. But Chelsea, yeah, I just think Lukaku, whether he scores or not, I wouldn't put my life on him scoring, but I would absolutely put my life on him playing a big role in deciding this tie. I think that one way or another, he'll have a big impact, whether that's getting an assist or disrupting to the level that creates opportunities for other players on the pitch. And Chelsea have got so much talent elsewhere on the pitch that can be enough. And it's going to take that. It's going to take that attention, that level of detail from Lille. It's going to take markers away one way or another, whether he scores or not. Like I say, I think Lukaku will have such a big impact on this game. The Club World Cup, not ideal timing for Chelsea. They come back and he returned to action. Luckily, you've got that sort of extra week from the other Champions League ties. But the travelling obviously isn't ideal. But still, I just cannot see any other way than Chelsea winning this game. The talent they've got to unlock. And, you know, there are a few teams with as many weapons in that top end of the pitch. And against Lille, that might be key given their defensive strengths. But yeah, for me, Chelsea, this is kind of perfect. And they couldn't really have asked for a much better draw given some of the other teams at this stage of the competition for me. So yeah, I think Chelsea, a strong performance here from over two legs.
I just want to see Sven Botman and Lukaku going to a 50-50. I think the windows in buildings might shatter when it happens. That'd be amazing.
I don't know if I put that down as an inevitable, a hopeful. I'm going to file that under hopeful. I'd love to see that happen. Calling it an inevitable might be a bit of a stretch, but you know, fingers crossed, magical things can happen in the Champions League last 16. Moving on to game number 5, Benfica against Ajax. Ajax were the kings of the group stage, and they'll be looking to flex again in the last 16. Their performance in the group stage was one of the big stories in the first half of the Champions League in 2021. Erik ten Hag is massively impressive. He's attracted attention from Manchester United and other clubs in other parts of Europe. But they dominated in the group stages, 6 wins from 6. They blew away Sporting, who eventually snuck through, and Borussia Dortmund, who were fancied to get through to the knockout stages. 20 goals in favour. Bayern Munich were the only ones to do better with 22. And then at the other end, they were the joint tightest defence in third place. So they've got a really solid all-round package. They can score as many goals almost as Bayern Munich. They're as tight defensively as Bayern. They're as tight defensively as Real Madrid, almost. And then they're coming up against Benfica, lowest scorers in the group stages, squeezed through to the last 16, 7 goals in 6 games, don't really score a huge amount. This is all pointing in one direction. And if Haller keeps going, this kind of one-man rivalry that he's got with Lewandowski for the Golden Boot, Ten Hag, Haller, etc., should just have enough to just flex their muscles and power on through.
Yeah, look, Benfica are only in the round of 16 because Ronald Koeman was retained as Barcelona manager. To put it mildly, basically, if he wasn't Barcelona manager, then Barcelona wouldn't have lost 3-0 in Lisbon. They were actually with a better team in the first half of that game. They would have won. They probably would have, and then Xavi would have had more time to build up, and they wouldn't have drawn in the home game. So Benfica are in here because Barca shot themselves in the foot, the face, the stomach, the hands, the arms, the legs, and the knees all at the same time. So they're not that good. Ajax will, I mean, I'm not going to say they'll destroy them, because Ajax have a lot of issues going on right now behind the scenes, and Benfica are, they're a team to be respected. You know, as much as they are only here because of Barca's play, they are a team to respect. They are a team of quality. Darwin Nunez is very, very good. He's a very good striker. However, against Besiktas in the group stage, Ajax, they beat them 2-0, and then they beat them 2-1, right? Otherwise, against Sporting and Dortmund, the two better teams in that group, they scored at least 3 goals in every single game. 5-1, 4-0, 3-1, and 4-2. They are a goal machine of a side. Haller is on some ridiculous form right now. Again, and we need to point this out, it can't be said enough times, Borussia Dortmund, Erling Haaland, Jude Bellingham are not in the Champions League knockout rounds, right? And it's not because they shot themselves in the foot. I mean, it is because they shot themselves in the foot, but it's also because Ajax just absolutely annihilated them. They had a double header against Ajax. They lost 4-0 and 3-1, back-to-back. I mean, utter domination. Ajax are going to kill Benfica. I think there's multiple predictions you could have, but my prediction is Ajax will have 15 or more shots in every game except for the first game away to Sporting, where they only had 13 shots. They have had at least 15 shots in every game. That's a ridiculous domination. 15. You're thinking back, oh, 15 shots, that's easy. In a Champions League game, having 15 or more shots every single time is not easy. And they are honestly ridiculous. They'll score goals as well, but you can never tell how many goals, because the goalkeeper could have a great game. Alec could miss chances. Strikers could be out of form. You can never tell, accurately predict how many goals they'll score. I would love to say they'll score at least 3 goals. I mean, they might do. Who the hell knows? But you can't predict that for sure. But they will absolutely have 15 or more shots in this game. They're phenomenal. They are sensational to watch. This is like, it's such a weird game because obviously Ajax, Benfica, you would never, I mean, first of all, 2 European Cup winners, by the way. But you would never think, oh yeah, in 2022, I'm going to sit down and watch Ajax Benfica. But mate, sit down and watch Ajax Benfica, because Ajax are a treat. They're beautiful to watch. Amazing. Antony, Gravenberch, Dusan Tadic, Ale, what's his name? Right back, Mazraoui, Jurrien Timber in defence. Daily Blind is still there. Daily Blind, remember him? Still ticking along. Just a fantastic side. Watch them.
We're going to flick on to the last two games, and like any good poker player, save your strong suits or save your favourite suits until last. So we've got Villarreal for Jamie, they're up against Juventus, and then to wrap up, we've got Atletico Madrid against Manchester United, and Mo is absolutely dying to talk about Cristiano Ronaldo and what he's going to do to Diego Simeone, but we'll give that a little break for a second. We'll come to that in a minute. Villarreal against Juventus, Jamie. Allegri's flicked things around in Turin during the January window. Kulusevski and Bentancur have gone to Tottenham. Aaron Ramsey, bizarrely, has gone to Rangers. They've all left. but they brought in the big boy, the golden boy of Serie A, Dusan Vlahovic from Fiorentina, and Denis Zakaria has also come in from Borussia Mönchengladbach. And Vlahovic has come to the attention across Europe for his goals over the last 12 months. 44 Serie A goals in 98 games with Fiorentina. Nobody has scored more in that period. Every club in Europe were chasing him, they were interested in him, despite the fact he's never actually kicked the ball in the Champions League. His only European experience was 20 minutes of Europa League qualifying action back in his Partizan days. But he's hit the ground running, debut goal within 13 minutes of his Juve career. That shows that he's ready for this. And when you look at his deeper numbers, 12.7 XG from 21 Serie A games this season, that puts him second behind Ciro Immobile and is well above Lautaro Martinez and Edin Dzeko, strikers that you would associate with the business end of the Champions League, and 13 in 13 league games before leaving Fiorentina to say bye-bye. You'd expect him to make a splash. Villarreal is your patch. You watch them regularly. They will now have to maybe readjust, maybe change things, because they were probably planning to face a certain Juventus, and now they're going to be facing Vlahovic's Juventus.
Yeah, sure. I know Mo was very excited about this one, but I think that it might be a little bit more difficult than we make out to be. I think Villarreal, they always turn up in these games, you know. They've defended better strikers than Vlahovic. I know he's a brilliant in-form striker, but Karim Benzema and Vinicius Junior couldn't create anything, couldn't score, couldn't assist, couldn't drum up any sort of momentum against Villarreal during the season. They drew 0-0. Villarreal have been very good against the upper sides, and they absolutely smoked Atalanta in the last game in the group stage. I think this will be an interesting one. Real Albiol will probably stick to Vlahovic, experienced, know-how, everything you need at this stage of the competition. And we know Unai Emery builds game plans specific to these knockout stage games. And that'll make things so much more difficult for Juventus, who've also got Chiesa out, of course. And Chiellini's also going to miss this one. Concerningly for Villarreal, Gerard Moreno looks like he's going to miss the first leg. He's picked up a calf injury, so that is a huge blow for Villarreal. But defensively, I think they'll be stronger than what we'd expect. They've kept 3 clean sheets in the last 5 La Liga games, and they've really turned things around this season, and now heading towards that top four where they make a lot of different question. Juventus, not what they once were, of course. These injuries won't help them the next couple of weeks. We've seen what Villarreal did to Atalanta, and arguably Atalanta right up there with Juventus. So I know Vlahovic is a huge threat. I know he's in form. But in these tight games that Unai Emery tries to make tight on purpose, you know, he deliberately forces things to be fine margins. I think the Villarreal have got the experience they need to at least make this a tight game. I don't think they'll be settled until the last 10 minutes of the second leg.
I mean, I'd love that to be true, and I'd love Villarreal to go through. I think they're a fantastic side. I love their players. Danjuma is sensational, one of the best players to watch in La Liga. Chukwueze is always box office. But one thing is, unlike Benzema, who blows hot and cold, even now, even in this amazing season he's having, he blows hot and cold. Vlahovic is consistent. And that's my only worry, is that he's constantly at it. And I love Albiol. I think it's amazing, his career resurgence, because he was meant to be Piqué and Ramos level. Everyone forgets that now. 12 years ago, he came through, same time as them. It was meant to be Piqué right back, Albiol, Ramos right back, Piqué and Albiol centre back. Albiol didn't quite emerge to the same level as those two, Ramos supplying him centre back. But I'm worried. I hope I'm wrong, though, because I think Villarreal are great. I'd love them to go far. It's always great fun when Unai Emery does hilarious Unai Emery tactical things to people.
Yeah, I think Juventus will come through. I really do, but yeah, I just think this one's going to go right to the second leg, and that's just how Unai Emery will want it to go. So, I think an excited second leg and probably a boring first leg awaits.
I would agree on the whole Albiol Vlahovic subplot, because fans of La Liga, Jamie will remind you of this. Albiol is the oldest war dog in town. Like, he just sticks to players like glue. He won't give anything up. He knows every trick in the book. He's marked every striker you can think of in European football, and he rarely, rarely gets bested. So this is going to be a really interesting one, because this will be Vlahovic's Champions League debut, and he's coming up against someone who's been there, done that, bought the T-shirt, sold the T-shirt, bought another T-shirt. His wardrobe's full of T-shirts. He sells them, he buys them. I think this is going to be absolutely massive for him. Right, final game, Mo, you've done brilliantly to hold on for this one, because regular listeners to the podcast will know that Mo does enjoy just dropping in. Who else thinks that Cristiano Ronaldo is going to terrorise Diego Simeone? So now, Mo, you've actually got the chance to really go to town on this and exactly detail to us what Cristiano Ronaldo is planning to do. Things are getting a bit hairy in La Liga for Diego Simeone. Jamie, obviously, you cover La Liga regularly. You'll know this. They're well out of the title race in terms of defending their title. And just when things are looking a bit sticky, he finds himself bumping into Cristiano Ronaldo in the last 16. We talked about Messi at the top of the show, but I just want to throw some Ronaldo, Atletico, Simeone data at you before, Mo, you start. He loves playing Atleti and he loves playing Simeone. 25 goals in 35 games. Most played opponents. Second most goals against, just after Sevilla, on 27. And ironically, Ronaldo didn't actually score a La Liga goal or a European goal against Atletico until Simeone arrived. It was almost like he was waiting for him. And then when he turned up, in their first game, he banged in a hat-trick just to prove a bit of a point. And since then, he's been a full-on nemesis. 2014 Champions League final goal, scored the winning penalty in the 2016 final, and then two hat-tricks against them in 16-17. Now at United, I think it's fair to say, Mo, Ronaldo has been United's saviour in the Champions League this season. I don't think that's an understatement. Minimum of a goal per game in the Champions League he's played in so far. Six of United's 11 Champions League goals have been scored by him, and he's had a hand in 80% of them. Manchester United need Ronaldo, and luckily for Manchester United, when it comes to Atletico and when it comes to Simeone, he does the business.
I mean, yeah, this is the thing. Ronaldo has been their saviour in the Champions League. He's also been their problem, because it's like he couldn't play Solskjaer-style football, which was energetic, high-octane, high-intensity, lots of running. He couldn't do that, so Solskjaer had to adjust his tactics to accommodate him, which made them very stagnant and meant that they were like sort of constantly fighting and scraping to get into playing games. Like we mentioned Unai Emery just then. Unai Emery did a number on Man United, especially at Old Trafford, and only David De Gea's amazing performance is what kept United in that game for Ronaldo to win it later on. You know, United had a lot of spirited comebacks in the group stages, which was fantastic stuff. It's not sustainable, right? As we've seen, Ronaldo's goals have dried up. He's just gone on his longest goal scoring drought since 2010. He's gone five games without, I mean, it's only five games without a goal. That shows the absurd standards he's set, but he's gone five games without a goal against very, very goal scorable opponents. That's a weird sentence, but you know, teams that he should score
against. Porous opponents.
Teams that he should be scoring against, and he's not. So, but again, it all comes to, in the Champions League, right? In a six-season spell from 2013-14 to 2018-19, Cristiano Ronaldo's team, which was either Real Madrid or Juventus, eliminated Diego Simeone's Atletico Madrid from the Champions League five times. 2014 final, right? That's the first one. That was huge. 2014-15 quarterfinal, right? 2016 final. 2017 semi-final. Then took a break because Atletico got dumped out in the group stages in 2018. They went to the Europa League. So 4 years in a row, took a break, came back with Juventus now to round of 16. Bang. Loses 2-0 second leg. Hat-trick second. Loses 2-0 first leg. Hat-trick second leg. Inevitable. Last two home games he's played against Atletico Madrid in the Champions League. Hat-tricks. Oh, in the knockout round, sorry, I should say. He's played them, and they played them again in the group stages last season, 2019-20. They didn't actually score, but they won. He kills Atletico Madrid every time. So it's not that he's, you know, they're going to play well. I don't think they will play that well. I think Cholo, I mean, Atletico Madrid aren't the Atletico Madrid they were. We've seen them. It's their weakest defence for a while. And I think Ragnik will be smart. But the thing is, ultimately, Scott McTominay is a huge liability in the base of midfield. Very vulnerable to pressing. Atletico Madrid, you just stick Antoine Griezmann or João Félix or Angel Correa or anyone, Koke or Thomas Lemar, whoever, on him, you can get the ball off him like that. And then it's easy peasy. It's open season because Pogba's not a great defensive player. Bruno Fernandes is up the pitch. But it doesn't matter. I in my head, all the game plans I think in my head, I'm thinking of how Simeone is going to outdo Man United, how he's going to outthink Man United, how he's going to do this and do that. But it doesn't matter because at the end of the day, Cristiano Ronaldo will score goals. There won't have to be good chances. There could be like a half chance, a volley, like his left foot from like a 12 degree angle. He'll score it. It'll go in. Oblak's not the goalkeeper he was. Oblak's not in the great form he usually is. He's letting goals in like ridiculously. It's just going to happen. It's not even something that you want to or think about or like logically can describe as something that will happen. It's just going to happen.
I just wanted to point out, you mentioned the kind of the press in there with with McTominay. I think it's a huge blow for Atletico Madrid to lose Daniel Vaz, and not because Daniel Vaz, but because Marcos Llorente is going to have to play in that right-back role. And it's a huge missed opportunity for his energy. A, he's much better in midfield, I feel. And B, his energy in midfield could have made a difference in this game. And the fact he has to play right-back is a huge blow unless he somehow plays for Celtico.
But at the same time, I think he could absolutely punt if they play Sancho left wing. He's absolutely going to punish Sancho because Sancho's not going to track him defensively, and he could actually kill United with overloads. And if it is Rashford who plays left wing, he's just going to exhaust Rashford running back towards his own goal constantly. So there's look, again, logically in my head, every logical scenario I come up with comes up with Atletico Madrid winning the game. Even though Atletico Madrid aren't in great form, Cholo Simeone is such a great tactician and he's such a clever and canny operator, and he's got so many players who just know how to destabilize and be sneaky and be cheeky, and he'll play the way Burnley played, for instance. He'll sit deep, Luis Suarez can vault Weghorst, just bully United centre-back, all this stuff. Suarez against Varane has typically gone the way of the Uruguayan. Suarez against Ramos, Suarez against Real Madrid defenders usually went Suarez's way, right? And then Maguire, I mean, come on, with the way Maguire's playing now, and I like Maguire a lot, I rate him highly, but with Maguire, can you imagine Angel Correa running at Maguire right now? He's put him in the spin cycle. It'll send him into, the cartoon world with Tasmanian Devil. But Maguire be looking like that, trying to chase Correa. So, but none of it matters because Cristiano's going to score goals.
Ronaldo.
And yeah, it defies logic. It's just inevitable. It's like Thanos, man. I am inevitable. There you go.
Quickly before we wrap up, Jamie, I want to ask you about Atletico Madrid. Obviously, you're covering La Liga regularly. Ronaldo is the big story, the box office story, particularly if Mo is writing the pieces. Looking at Atletico's record so far this season, something that really jumps out, they've conceded 30 goals already in La Liga at this stage, which is more than the total in any season under Diego Simeone, apart from his first full season, which was 2012-13, when they conceded 31. Obviously came in mid 11-12 when they conceded 46. This is really, really bad. We associate, maybe sometimes lazily, Atletico with having this fantastic defensive record. 30 La Liga goals at this point is very not Simeone and very not Atletico. Obviously, we know Kieran Trippier has left. He's gone to Newcastle. You said Daniel Vaz has come in. Ronaldo, that we mentioned before, has come in. Why are they conceding so many goals? What is the issue?
Yeah, they've had plenty of defensive issues. In the defence, well, this doesn't cover the whole season, but Stefan Savage has been out for a good few weeks. He's now back. And they've kind of flip-flopped between the back four and the back five. And I'd probably like to see the back five. In truth, I think it works better for Simeone, certainly in La Liga football. It's a tricky one to put your finger on. I think it's been the one positive about this game is that at least we get rid of one dysfunctional team, because both of these are in dire straits at the moment. But yeah, defensively, a big problem. The departure of Trippier, respect for Atletico Madrid for letting him go and for personal reasons, but it was a disaster for them. He was such a big part of the title last season. Like I said, well, they need to settle back for. They need Savic and Jimenez in there. This loss of Savic was absolutely huge. He's just got that bulldog spirit that Jimenez, he's up and down, of course. Mario Ramos plays in there as well. But
that's it. He's up and down, isn't it? Jimenez, like, he could be a 9 out of 10, but he could be a 4 out of 10. It's impossible to tell with him. And he was great against Barcelona at the weekend. They still lost 4-1, so it's, or 4-2. So it's like...
But Savage does stabilise him, I feel, so that's a big help.
Yeah, and I think Oblak is the key thing. That's why they conceded so many goals. Oblak usually has been a rock for them, absolute pillar. Like, everyone thinks of the great Anfield win that they had against Liverpool. That wasn't like a Simeone masterclass. Everyone said it was. It wasn't. They got pummeled in that game. They gave up loads of chances. Oblak just had an absolutely incredible form, put in a incredible performance and kept Liverpool out. And Liverpool had some bad finishing too. So Oblak is so often the difference for them. And he's just sort of like, it's like evaporated from him this season. He's like forgotten how to do it. And he's not making saves that you think he should make. And my son pointed this out to my 8-year-old. My 8-year-old can tell this. He goes, he watched the Barca Atletico. And when Gavi scored the header, he's like, Dad, Oblak should save that, shouldn't he? Like Gavi's like a little boy. Like, Oblak should save that. And I was like, yeah, you know what? Oblak should save that. And yeah, and that's just one of the examples where it's not like a massive error that he made, that he let the Gavi goal in. But like, Oblak last season would save that. He would have got to it. It was just a dive. He would have got to it and put it away. This season, he's not. And those little fine margins, for Atletico Madrid, a team that plays on fine margins, that's a huge issue. And also, quickly, Felipe is rubbish. Absolute garbage. The worst. I can't believe Simeone bought this guy, played this guy, and it ever worked. He's rubbish. He's the worst defender I've ever seen under Diego Simeone. He panics. He's never in the right position. He's not tough. he's just garbage. He's so bad. It's unbelievable. And like,
yeah, the Ronaldo factor is going to be massive. But I think in all this chat, I'd give a big shout out because it just reminds you how good Diego Godin was back in the day and how brilliant he was for
Atletico Miranda.
Madrid. And Miranda, yeah. I think if they had those two boys, we'd be seeing a different Atletico Madrid this season. Right, we're going to wrap it up for the Champions League inevitables. We've given 8 big shouts on what we think are going to happen in these Champions League games. Hopefully we're right. We're probably going to be wrong, but let's see how it goes. That's the excitement of Champions League action. Mo loves a prediction. Jamie's demonstrated that he loves a prediction as well, but we're going to call it there for today's show. Jamie, Mo, as always, thanks so much for your time.
My pleasure.
Pleasure.
Great stuff indeed, guys. We'll be back next week with a Bayern Munich special. So if you're a Bundesliga fan or you want to get the inside track on Bayern Munich and how they're shaping up ahead of the Champions League last 16, make sure you check it out. If you hit subscribe on this episode, you can get access to that as soon as it is ready. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you again very, very soon.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.
Are you missing the sounds that matter most? What if you could hear every word, every laugh, and every moment crystal clear without spending thousands on expensive hearing aids? Introducing Audionatum, the world's most affordable FDA-approved hearing aid. With the revolutionary A2 chip, you get premium sound, zero background noise, and a 24-hour rechargeable battery. They even have Bluetooth connectivity to connect to your cell phone or TV. Unlike those traditional bulky $5,000 prescription hearing aids, the Audionatum is 90% smaller, 20 times cheaper, and works instantly. No visits to the audiologist needed. Audionatum has over 500,000 happy customers who have trusted Audionatum to restore their hearing. Our 100% money-back guarantee means zero risk to try. Don't like them? Simply return them and get your money back. They also come with a lifetime warranty. For the next 72 hours, the Audionatum is 53% off. Go to tryhearingaid.com right now to order your pair for only $99. Again, go to tryhearingaid.com to order your pair for only $99. Order now before it's too late, as these hearing aids have sold out over 10 times this year. With Audionatum, you can hear life again.